It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, federal data shows a significant increase in recent years in the number of guns used in crimes that were purchased in a different state from where the crime was committed. We'll talk to a pair of reporters who looked into interstate gun trafficking here in the U.S. Now, Milwaukee is getting ready to host the Republican National Convention in 2024. City leaders like Mayor Cavalier Johnson, who we talked to on Central Time on Monday, say the event will have a positive economic impact for Milwaukee and can help it gain more political favor from state Republicans. Our next guest questions those benefits. Philip Rocco is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you, Rob.
Let's start with the economic side of things. Predictions of big bucks from supporters of bringing the convention into Milwaukee in 2024. You're not as wowed by the numbers you're seeing.
Well, yeah, and I think this is pretty common for cities that, you know, want to host, where there's desire to host a political convention, to project some, you know, huge number, something like $200 million of economic impact. Now, while there's obviously going to be economic impact, like there would be from any, you know, event that the city brings in, you know, I think for me, in looking at the research on this, it's really a question of scale. So, you know, if you think about where most of the economic impact for conventions comes from, it comes from hotel room nights. Usually prices for hotel rooms go up. And so that's where you see, you know, typically that comes out to be about, for a standard political convention, about $20 million. And then the question is, where does the rest of that, you know, $180 million projection kind of come from? And I think it's kind of interesting. I think the city and the Visit Milwaukee has sort of backed off that $200 million number a little bit in you know, since the decision was made. But if you look at those projections, it's really hard to see where that additional $180 million comes from. And you know, if you look at something like where the other spending happens, it's like food and beverages. And that usually is south of about $1 million in a lot of these conventions. A lot of it is insurance. So it really, in terms of scale, not as significant as the city initially projected. Does that mean that local businesses aren't going to see any benefit? No. But it's just in terms of the outsized kind of scale of these projections, it's worth being, I think, a little bit cautious about how much returns we're sort of seeing.
And before we move on from the economic side of things, Mayor Johnson also said, hey, this is a billboard for the city of Milwaukee. If we can show the world we can handle a convention of this size, it's going to put us on the map for conventions of a lot of different and events of a lot of different sizes. It'll pay off down the road.
Yeah. And, that's sort of hard to sort of test the reliability of a statement like that. I mean, could it be true? Certainly. Is it easy to quantify what's happened to cities that have hosted political conventions in the past, what the net effect of that has been? It's pretty hard. Certainly there's a possibility, but it also seems like Milwaukee, I guess one could say, has been bringing in larger and larger events over recent years. So one question is, you know, what is the net effect of that, holding that convention relative to some of the costs, including security costs, I might add. Especially given the sort of rise in political violence since 2020. I mean, that's a non-insubstantial cost.
Let's move from economics now to politics. Mayor Johnson told us on Monday that he thinks hosting the RNC could help the city, very Democratic-leaning city, be more favorable among Republicans in the state legislature. Here's a listen.
You know, the benefit of having the RNC here for any Republican, doesn't matter at what level, is, look, You can't say that, you know, Milwaukee is, you know, a bad place or any of those lines that we've heard before if we're willing to have and you'll take part in the Republican National Convention here in our city. And we've heard so many Republicans say this, is that this is a great city, and I totally concur. Now let's act like it, and let's make the investments in this city so we can be a benefit not just to the folks here and the businesses here, but to the rest of the state of Wisconsin as well. That's what I want to see.
So a Republican convention as Democratic or as a diplomatic outreach to the Republicans in the legislature, Phil?
Yeah, if I were to guess what the real motivation behind Mayor Johnson's, I think, real commitment to bring the RNC here, it would be that, right? It's not the economic benefits in the end overall are going to be negligible. And more importantly, because of the state revenue structure, the city is not going to be able to see any returns as a city through the sales tax or through fees on hotel rooms and things like that. All of that money is going to go to the state, where Republicans are going to ultimately have a huge hand in deciding how it's spent. So it has to be the case, just from an analytical perspective, that the motivation for this comes from trying to bring some greater bargaining power for the city with respect to the state legislature, especially on something like the city being able to raise revenues. It sort of becomes like a poster child for why the city should be able to collect revenues off of that. Now, whether or not that's going to happen as a result of the convention, you know, I would count myself as a skeptic, and at the very least, someone who believes that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And if you look at the number of times that cities, not just Milwaukee, but cities around the state have tried to get a better deal in terms of the revenues that they have access to, trying to end some patterns of state-level preemption of local laws, the Republican state legislature has been pretty not receptive to that. And even in comparison to state legislatures around the country, there's a lot of preemption and a lot of constraints on local revenue. And so one question I sort of have, and one thing I'm going to keep looking at here is, you know, what exactly is changing as a result of hosting the convention, right? What, you know, typically in a bargaining scenario, you have to have something to withhold or to deny. And I think the fact that the city was essentially willing to host the convention without any quid pro quo, at least that was visible in the public negotiations, you know, doesn't necessarily reveal the city in a very strong bargaining position. It actually looks like, to me, the city's in a fairly weak bargaining position. And so one thing I'm going to be looking for is exactly what is changing in terms of the level of commitment from state level officials with respect to giving Milwaukee its fair share of revenues.
And just very briefly, as a wrap up, Phil, is there one condition you'd like to see attached to this, assuming that this is a done deal, it happens in 2024, that would make it, at least as you see it, less bad?
Well, I think just from a fiscal standpoint, there was a framework agreement the city signed on to that could be amended. There's a provision that allows parties to agree on an amendment. And I think it would be interesting to see whether or not the state would be amenable to that. If you look at what happened in Tennessee, the state was actually willing to make an offer of a huge tourism grant to the city of Nashville as a way of enticing it to host the convention. And I think there might be some possibility of the city trying to extract a little bit more in terms of the returns, especially given that it's really stands alone among other cities that have hosted conventions in the sense that it will not, the city as a city will not be able to collect revenue off the back of undertaking what I think is a fairly significant logistical challenge and an operational risk on the days of the convention itself.
Phil, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Great to be with you, Rob.
That's Philip Rocco, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University, with us today looking at the impact of the Republican National Convention coming to Milwaukee in 2 years. We heard Monday from Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum on the origin of one of Wisconsin's favorite words.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to cut into your regularly scheduled public radio programming, but we're here today to tell you a bit about the beloved word ope and its possible connection to the Midwest. The popularity of the word prompted a Wisconsin listener to wonder where it comes from. WPR's Andrea Anderson has more.
Diane Flaff of Hartford grew up in Wisconsin hearing and saying the word ope. It was about a year ago when someone sent her a video by comedian Charlie Behrens embracing the word and its role in the Midwest dialect.
Okay, ope is a polite apologetic Ope is a polite apologetic exclamation expressing a sincere remorse for using oxygen on planet Earth.
Flaff had several questions about the word, so she reached out to Wisconsin Public Radio's Wisconsin for answers.
I want to know where it came from. Why do we say it all the time? And why did it all of a sudden become more popular, more well-known recently?
Flaff even did an experiment to see if people found the word to be a distraction during a conversation.
No one bats an eye. So I've tried to do it intentionally a couple of times just to see if I would get a chuckle or a look or anything, but there's nothing. Everyone just accepts it as part of our language.
To get answers to her questions, I reached out to one of public radio's favorite linguistic experts, Grant Barrett, co-host of Away with Words. And Barrett had some shocking news to share. The word ope is not specific to the Midwest. We don't own this word.
I'm sorry to take away this Midwestern thing, but you can still have the ranch dressing. We'll still give you that.
Barrett says the word is used across the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and maybe even non-English-speaking countries. So if it's that widespread, where does ope come from?
It's a physical function of the body and not a linguistic function. So what's happening is it's a little noise that you make when you suddenly stop expelling air. So it's a gentle stop. For example, you might be moving or making some kind of gesture with your hands or talking, and then you're interrupted. And you bring your expulsion, your exhalation of air to a sudden end, and it brings your lips together, which creates what linguists call an excrescent P.
Barrett explains excrescent in linguistics means a sound that occurs in a word without having any etymological basis. That P sound can't be traced to a French root or a Latin root or a Greek root. It's created by our mouths stopping air.
In the same way that the action that we're doing is cut off, the air is cut off too. And it sounds a little like oop or up.
So let's dive into another question. Is ope being used more today? Not really. Barrett says it has been used for at least 10 years and likely much longer. Some people may be seeing ope pop up more in social media thanks to memes. Barrett says they may be experiencing what's called the recency illusion. And that is when, once we notice something, we notice it more. Now, as a Midwesterner, you may be thinking, well, this is part of our identity. It's part of how we talk. And don't you know this matches our accent? There's a reason you think that.
I'm going to throw one more linguistic thing at you, and this is called a markedness. The tendency for a group of people to note that something is typical of them or people like them. And so that's what's happening with ope here in Wisconsin and places like Wisconsin.
WPR's Andrea Anderson brought us that story on the word ope. And this story idea came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future story. Go to WPR.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.